On the morning of February 13th, 2023, I woke up about 3:30 a.m. I always rise with the sun, and we had left the blinds open so we wouldn't miss the morning light. It's what you do when you're seeing Antarctica for the first time. Overnight, we had steamed to a new location on the Antarctic Peninsula, Port Lockroy. My cabin mate and fellow Grosvenor teacher fellow, Justin Moody, and I suited up in insulated pants, wool socks, parkas, hats, and gloves, and headed on deck for a pre-dawn photo shoot. The water was glassy, reflecting a string of snow-capped peaks, and the moon still visible to the north. A few penguins porpoised across the bow of the ship, and the sun rose silently behind a mountain. It was the best photo shoot of the trip. Our ship, the Explorer, rounded the bend just after breakfast, and we hopped on Zodiacs for a landing. The British Research Station at Port Lockroy was established in 1944 and operated until 1962, when it was abandoned. In 1996, the old facility was renovated, and it's now the most popular tourist attraction on the continent, drawing over 18,000 visitors a year. As you might expect of a remote mid-century research station, this place is right out of a Wes Anderson film. There's a closet-sized office with typewriter and filing cabinets for the base commander, a small library of two bookshelves stocked with dog-eared paperbacks. I spied some of the classics and a full set of Nancy Drew mysteries. There's a dark room and a small bar where the men enjoyed whiskey, gin, or sherry on weekends. The workshop for fixing anything and everything on base smelled of oil and old wood. And the bunk room, whose mint green walls were decorated with hand-painted female movie stars of the 1950s. Small windows dressed with cheery, red-checkered curtains look out on the bay and the Gentoo penguin colony just outside. You can almost picture the men walking around in red ski caps and turtlenecks, chattering, waving their pipes in the air to make a point. This place is amazing. But all filmmaking aside, this had to have been a rough place to live, especially in winter when the sun barely rises and the wind blows furiously. When my hands got numb from the cold on that photo shoot earlier in the morning, I just retreated to the chart room for a cappuccino. The guys who ran this place back in the day were legit. The restored base now has a gift shop. Yes, they accept Apple Pay. And you can even mail a postcard or letter to get your stamp canceled from Port Lockroy. Between shuttling visitors and sharing the history of this place, operations manager Lucy Brozzoni took a break to speak with me about what a place like this means in the modern world and what it can help us understand about our relationship with the natural world.
So I'm the base leader at Port Lockroy this season. So that's for the 22-23 season. We're open here for the Austral summer from November through to March. And so my responsibilities include overseeing the base, making sure that the team are doing their jobs effectively and everyone is safe and happy whilst they're here.
How did you end up here? This is like a strange end of the world kind of location. How does one end up at this place?
Well, Antarctica's a very special place, and the opportunity to come and spend time here is really unique and a sort of once in a lifetime in a way. I've had an interest in Antarctica for many years. I am a geographer by training. I have a geography degree, and I worked at the Royal Geographical Society for a number of years, where I learned more about Antarctica and particularly about the heroic era of expeditions. And subsequent years, I've been working in the field of sustainability and environmental conservation and protection. And Antarctica, for me, is really sort of where everything comes together. It's got the beauty of the natural world, and it influences us globally in terms of what happens. But equally, we really influence and have a big impact on Antarctica as well. So it's a great connecting place from that perspective.
That's wonderful. That's what I'm finding out, too. And I feel like sometimes it's sort of ironic because as humans migrate to different parts of the world, they tend to break things or not treat them well. And now I see it sounds like what you're doing is the explorers came, there were whalers and things like that in that time period, and now it's turning into something very different than what it originally was, right? The space performs a different function, maybe?
In terms of the historic site here at Port Lockroy.
Yes.
Yes, so there is this great history, well, a very extensive history here at Port Lockroy, a very sheltered bay. So many different explorers came here in the early years. And then, as you say, there were the whalers who really exploited this area. And I think we can learn a lot from that in terms of what was acceptable then and what is acceptable now. And it would be interesting to look back and consider what activities we currently undertake and whether they're acceptable in the future as well. And I think as a historical site, we can also tell the tales of the importance of the scientific research that happened here and the lengths that people went to enable that research, the conditions that they were living in, and the fact of the importance of long-term data collection, because it was through some of the data that was collected here at Port Lockroy and the other British bases across the peninsula that helped us to build our understanding of climate change, and it's still being used today, some of that data. So it's wonderful to be able to share in situ for people to come here and see in the context in which it was originally used what life was like here, and to have that connection to our current understanding of the world.
That's wonderful. I often feel like it's out of context if you don't physically go to the place and smell it and feel it, you know, and see the light. There's much more of a personal human connection to it when you do that.
Absolutely. And I think when we're living here, for us, it's a very busy location. We have a lot of visitors, which is a fantastic way of being able to share the site. There's also the silence which comes when the visitors go, but it's not ever silent. You can possibly hear the penguins in the background at the moment. We have a lot of noises, different noises. There's the crashing of the glaciers calving, there's the wind, there's the animals around, there's the water lapping. So there's the sort of slapping of the penguins' feet as they walk around. So there's some fantastic sounds that you, because you're remote and because you're in a more isolated condition, you have the chance to sort of pause and really listen and engage with the natural world. But also when you're in the buildings, the historical buildings, you can reflect on what it was like to live here. And sometimes when we've been in these buildings, when the wind's howling outside, you really imagine what life was like and sort of how those men lived here and maybe had their heating on. And although in some winters they were, I know, rationed because their supplies didn't arrive. So how they were sort of living in those conditions and going out every 3 hours to take their meteorological measurements and really committed and I think possibly a bit sturdier than we are today, although not necessarily, that different people do things in different ways these days as well.
Sturdier, that's a great way to put it. Oh, yeah, you know, I was going to kind of ask about that because you mentioned the quiet that's not really quiet. And for so many of us in modern society, we feel this need to be connected all the time to our friends, our family, the world, the news. What is it like being here for so long, unconnected or disconnected from the rest of the world?
Yeah, so I think it's a really unique opportunity. As you say, in modern society, we are very connected and we have a huge amount of stimulus. And actually switching off every now and again is something that's really important. And I think all of us are reflecting that when we go back home, we will perhaps look at our phones less, try to be a little bit less constantly on the go. And it gives you a chance to talk more. We talk a lot as colleagues, which is lovely, and to consider to write letters. We use the post office here ourselves a lot as well, send postcards home. We've received post as well, and that's part, like, one of the highlights for being here is receiving letters from home. And it might be a few months late, but you still get news, you understand what's happening. And I think sometimes that slower way of communicating is not something that we have so much connection with. And it's been really fascinating to see the visitors that come here. Many have never sent a postcard before, and the delight that they get in that opportunity. So I would definitely encourage people to perhaps do a little bit of letter writing at home as well, and to switch off phones and devices and to engage yeah, have some conversations with people that you might not otherwise have. And I know it's really difficult to do because we have had the opportunity to get on ships and get Wi-Fi occasionally. So we're not completely cut off, as you might imagine. And we have got satellite internet here, so we can email home. But because we're very busy, we don't do that very often. And so then when you do have contact, it's a really, yeah, really nice thing to have. So, and we get a lot of news. We have a lot of people passing through. So world events, we still hear about it. So whilst we are in a way isolated, we hear what's going on, especially the Antarctic news that comes through the grapevine. We've got a fantastic message board here as well that's intership communications between expedition teams as well. So that's a nice way of maintaining those relationships of the community down here.
That's really fantastic. And most people will probably never make it here to this continent. What do you want them to know about this place?
From my experience of being here, Antarctica is an extremely special place. And it's a lot of the visitors who come reflect on the sort of scale and vastness of everything. However much you might have imagined it, it's perhaps bigger and more impressive than you first thought. And it seems very solid, but it's also a very vulnerable place. But I think whilst those of us that don't have, or those people that don't have the opportunity to come here, it feels very remote and distant. But actually we are very connected to it in many, many ways. And it's a global system in which we live. And I think it would be what I'd like to share more is to be able to share those tangible experiences and for people to be able to feel connected and recognise the importance of this continent on their lives at home and vice versa. And that's what the UK Antarctic Heritage Trust really tries to do as well, is to share the stories that have occurred here in Antarctica, share what these buildings look like, the sounds and sights and smells, so that others can also live those experiences too.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Not at all. Lovely to talk with you. And yeah, if there's definitely more information on the UK Antarctic Heritage Trust website, and we also have a podcast series, so there's lots more stories there that can be listened to, and which is www.ukaht.org, and lots more resources there to learn more about this site and all the others that we look after.
Fantastic. We'll definitely be sharing that in the show notes. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Remember that poetry workshop I mentioned in the season's trailer? The one that led me to the bottom of the earth? Okay, here's where it gets interesting. The teacher for that poetry workshop, Brendan Constantine, always gives us the most fantastic prompts and exercises to rewire our brains and help us come up with original ideas. And it wasn't until I took his class again, 2 months after my expedition to Antarctica, that I recognized a prompt that I had completed in his workshop a year before. It was a challenge to write a poem as a resume for a job at the bottom of the world. I had forgotten all about it until that second workshop, and then when I looked at it more closely, it was in fact a real job listing from the UK Antarctic Heritage Trust for a job at, you guessed it, Port Lockroy. I guess I was destined to come here. I mean, this place crossed my life 3 times in the span of a single year. In case you're wondering, the poem I wrote from that prompt, a resume for the job at the bottom of the world, didn't turn out very well. I mean, after all, they hired Lucy, right? And it's probably for the best. I've always been a wanderer and explorer, and while I like wearing red ski caps and drinking cocktails with colleagues at homemade bars on Friday nights, I don't think I'm sturdy enough to stay in this place for very long. I'll leave that to the heroic efforts of the Brits. This episode was written and produced by me, Michael Hernandez. It was created as part of my Lindblad Expeditions National Geographic Grosvenor Teacher Fellowship, an experience of a lifetime for which I am extremely grateful. You can find out more about National Geographic Education, the Grosvenor Teacher Fellowship, and tons of other teaching and learning resources on their website, education.nationalgeographic.org. To see photos from this episode, including those movie star paintings, visit our website, changethenarrative.net.